years old. There, their camp in Orr, Minnesota, then was a 4-week camp, and Frank was my counselor. He was 20 years old at the time, so a number of years ago, not that many from what you are. It is good to see your smiling faces today and be here with you. I want to lead out with a story that will help set the message up again today. In most of the northern states, there's a policy of checking on any stalled vehicle on the highway in the wintertime when the temperatures drop down to the single digits or below. Well, one winter morning, about 3 a.m., a Wyoming trooper responded to a call of a car on the shoulder on the outside of the town of Casper, on the shoulder of the highway there outside the city limits. Well, the trooper located the car. The engine was still running. It was stuck in deep snow alongside of the highway. Pulling in behind it with his emergency lights on and parking and getting out, he walked up to the door to find a man passed out at the wheel with an almost empty bottle of vodka beside him. So he tapped on the window, and of course, when he tapped on the window, the driver woke up. And the driver, seeing the rotating lights in his rearview mirror, panicked. He jerked the gear shift back into drive and got on the gas. Of course, now the whole time he is still stuck in the snow, right? And the speedometer shows 20 and 30 and 40 and then up to 50 miles per hour. Well, the trooper, having a sense of humor, he just began to run in place beside the car. The driver was totally freaked out, thinking the officer was keeping up with him. That went on for about 30 seconds. When the trooper said, "Pull over." So the driver turned his wheels, put it in park, and killed the engine. Once out of the car, the drunken driver asked about the trooper's special training. How he could possibly run 50 miles per hour. Well, he was arrested, of course, but he just couldn't get it off his mind of how the trooper had kept up with him at 50 miles per hour. The moral to the story is, take only a nip or two from the vodka. That's a little bit delayed. All right. The driver actually saw something that he really didn't see. He thought he saw something, right? He thought that he saw, that is, that which his eyes were seeing was not really what was happening, as he thought the trooper was running 50 miles per hour, keeping up with the car. So he was, you might say, having tricks played on him by his eyes. Have you ever had your eyes play tricks on you? Everyone in this room, as I go through this message, I'm sure will really identify, and you will tell your stories probably, and it will probably hopefully ignite and remember some of those stories that as I go through some things with the message today that you will think back to as I go along. His eyes were deceiving him. He had a distorted reality. The image. And that's what it was. It was only an illusion. That which he was seeing was not real. And yet his eyes told him it was very real. And he was still, from the story, the punchline, so to speak, still trying to figure it out after he was arrested. Of course, now when he sobered up, I'm sure he got it. But in the moment, he had a false sense of perception. His observation, the picture in his mind was framed by what the eyes saw. But again, what the eyes saw was not really real. It was only in his mind that it was real. His mind was playing tricks on him. Your title for the sermon today: perception, reality, or illusion? Perception, reality, or illusion? The Cambridge English Dictionary gives the definition for perception: a belief or opinion often held by many people and based on how things seem. You know, I went to a number of different definitions. You can go, if you like me, and you go sometimes to find a word definition on the internet, you can go to Free Dictionary, dictionary.com, Merriam-Webster, Collins. I mean, there's a lot of, and I'll always kind of look at a lot of them. And this one by the Cambridge English Dictionary captures the essence of perception in my mind, a belief or opinion often held by many, and you might say, you and I, a belief or opinion that we can hold, and it can seem so real by our perception or our perspectives, because every one of us in the room has perspectives. Oh, you put the topic out there, and we've all got our opinions and our beliefs and our perspectives. Well, I perceive it this way. Well, I perceive it this way. And there you go. We're living again in an age where more and more seemingly are basing more and more on their own perceptions. What they think they see, what they think they hear. Because, again, we operate by human senses. And there are no two human senses more powerful in processing everything around us than the eyes and the ears. We primarily process by what we see or what we hear or what we think we see or what we think we hear. And I've made so many mistakes in my life, and you have too, misjudging situations based on what you thought you see or think you see or what you heard or what you thought you heard, and forming dogmas about it. Calcifying. I love that word. Calcification. People who calcify around their own beliefs. You've heard the statement made. I know you have. Perception is reality. Is it? Is perception really reality? It is in the thinker. It is in the mind at the time. It is in that mind that at that moment thinks that it's looking or hearing and making a good, proper judgment. And it could be a very hasty judgment. And there again, what do? We see something with our eyes, or we hear something with our ears. And do we not make a hasty judgment so much of the time? The person that has come up to me in the past, and I'm not picking on anyone in this room, it's probably happened to you too. I don't think you like me. I don't think you like me very well at all. I think you've got something against me. No? Well, yeah. I want to talk to you about it because I really don't think you like me very much. I think you've got a problem with me. And I've had it happen to where the person sometimes wants to press the matter somewhat. And I've actually said to that person, well, we haven't had a problem, but if you keep on, we're going to have a problem. Perceptions run the gamut across the board of almost anything you can think about. How much do we see with a human eye or hear the senses? How much do we judge again by what we see, what we hear, and how many thoughts that we process by the sight, by hearing, that we form these more hardcore perceptions, and then those perceptions become reality in our mind. We all are guilty of this, because as human beings with a spirit in man, and again, I love the way Ken Martin addressed again the spirit in man last night in the sermon he gave June 6th, is the more I think about it and dwell on the human spirit, the spirit in man, the spirit of man gives us total ability to reason, to think, to process. And within the realm of all that, how much that enters the mind that we process by the sight and ears, how much is just a figment of our imagination? How much is just an illusion? How much do we judge by those two great sensory perceptions, the eyes, the ears? And I know that each one of you are, as I said, identifying. I wrote in my notes, proper and positive perception identifies and verifies. Excuse me. proper and positive perception identifies, verifies, and searches all things. There again, the power of discovery to the truth behind the matter. You know, I wrote in the column recently, one of the columns recently, I think I mentioned this here 2 weeks ago. I want to be a critical thinker, but I don't want to think critically. There is a vast difference in being a critical thinker and thinking critically. One is positive, one is negative. If you're a critical thinker, you're going to view everything almost that you can with an objective mind, searching for truth always. Digging, searching for the reality. Not overjudging by the eyes, the ears. Not judging things totally by the merits of what you think, your belief, your opinion. But to be that person that thinks critically is to always find fault, to be critical of others, to criticize, to be negative. So there's a vast difference in the two. And certainly as disciples of Jesus Christ, we have to always try to form positive perceptions based upon truth, reality, and also very much based on the very Spirit of God that is to impart to our minds and hearts proper attitudes in all things. One of the reasons I've chosen today to speak about this is because of all the deceptions and lies, fake news. Look around. Where are you going to find the truth anymore? Maybe later, another time, I'll say something about certain news sources that you can pretty much get the straight of things. I thought about it today, but I'll hold that for right now. I know the news sources that I feel like I can pretty much put a lot of confidence in. And even those news sources I sift. See, that's the key. You have to sift everything. Truth seekers are constantly sifting. To be a truth seeker means you have to constantly be sifting all things. And to have proper perceptions have to be sifted, and everything that's put before you has to be properly sifted, and most of all, with the Spirit of God in us. Too many people allow their human perceptions, the human senses, what they see by sight, what they hear, to lead and guide them in life. And if we rely just on our own human senses of sight and hearing, if that's all we rely on most of the time, our own beliefs, opinions, what have you, and we overly trust the self, then what's going to happen is you are going to stumble constantly in life. Our own sense of sight and hearing are very good at playing tricks on us, playing tricks on the mind. And as you sit here and hear these words, I know that you are identifying. How many times things have played tricks in your mind, things you saw are really wasn't what you thought you saw. I'll tell you two quick little stories about that. My Rhonda and I used to live just above my parents. Our house sit on just a little bit of a hill, a rise above my mom and dad. I had been visiting with mom and dad next door, and it was close to midnight, a summer night. It was a summer night, and had visited with them close to midnight. And so I kind of knew my way back to the house. I had a kind of a wooded lot, and I headed back up to the house walking. It was one of those nights that was so dark that if you put your hand here, you could kind of see the outline, but it was just a very dark night. I got within 100 feet or so of our house. We had a little path that went down to the garden. My garden was in a hollow just below the house. The little path went down to the garden. I was about 100 feet from the house, and all of a sudden I glanced over at the path, and something was standing in the path. Standing there in the path. It was so dark I couldn't tell what it was, but it was standing there. I just stopped. I froze. I'm just watching. Look, it's not moving. And I'm not moving either. And it's just standing there. I think maybe a minute or two passed. and I made a decision. I'm going to walk toward it, whatever it is. I'm just going to walk toward it. I walked toward it, got up very close, and it had to be Rhonda that had done it. It was the kid's red wagon, and it was standing on its end with a tongue up in the air in the path going down to my garden. Now, my perception was danger. I mean, when I looked and saw in the dark something standing, and it was big enough, I don't know if it was a human or an animal or what it was, but it's there. My perception, bells, sirens were going, it's danger. What are you going to do? And I just decided, I'm just going to walk toward it. If it's a man, I'll shake hands and say, what you doing here at midnight? You know, my perception was danger, and it was a red wagon. My eyes was playing tricks on me. All right, I'll tell you one more. We had a minister. I knew the man. I knew the minister when I was a teenager. He wore glasses. His eyesight wasn't very good. He goes into a bar at daylight, broad daylight. He went into the bar to meet with a member. And I think the story was that the member very likely was alcoholic. And if he wanted to see the member, he pretty much had to go in there and find him. So, but he goes into the bar. He stays in there a little while talking to the man. So when he comes back out into the bright sunlight, of course, you know, he wears glasses and his eyesight's not the best anyway. He doesn't see kind of the little curve there. He trips over it. And either he falls or almost falls face first. Well, he doesn't know it, but there's another member across the street over there that saw him come out of the bar and nearly stumble and fall. And the member, of course, perception, he's come out of the bar drunk. That's a true story. I knew the minister. You know, our perceptions and what we think we see sometimes, and how many times you're sitting here right now, and I'm sure you've got a story or two or three in your mind of the time that your eyes played tricks on you. Or your ears, you thought you heard it. You thought your, maybe you thought your friend or best friend or a church member, maybe you thought you heard them say something about you. You walk by Susie and Jane. We don't have a Susie and Jane here, so I can use Susie and Jane. You walk by Susie and Jane at church, and you heard something in a conversation. You heard your name, and automatically your perception was they're talking about me. Maybe you don't go to them. Maybe you do go, and oh, no, and it was positive, but you thought it was negative. I mean, this thing with perception, you can take it as far as you want to, because as human beings, frankly, brethren, we do that. We just... so much of the time rely on what we see or hear, and we quickly form ideals, or we read something. Same thing. You visually, you read something, and you read it, and you quickly begin to form perceptions based on what you just read. Now, granted, fact checkers, those who sift truth, are going to verify as much as possible. I am kind of throwing down a challenge, a good challenge to all of you in this room today. And that is to become more than ever sifters of truth. Truth on every front. Every front. Because we've got society, leaders, government leaders, society, we've got all these different ones lying to us. More in society are waking up and realizing it. More in society are waking up. I'm going to be very interested to see where this presidential election goes. And I think you are too. Was it Lincoln that said, you can fool some of the people some of the time, most of the people some of the time, but not all the people all the time? I think that's pretty close. Usually Sue fact checks me back there. But something like that. There's always a group that you cannot fool. Who's the one group on earth that we should not be being fooled that much? The Church of God. We are the ones, most of all, who should be the fact checkers, those who sift the things we hear, looking for the truth, peeling back the layers to get to the truth. Perception is not reality so much of the time. But we as human beings make the big mistake so much of the time believing that it is. And Our eyes then begin to deceive us. Our ears deceive us. And we wind up with so many misinterpretations at times and so many misleading thoughts and ideals and views. As I've grown older, as I speak so transparently to you here today, I've learned something. One of the most dangerous things for us as human beings is to calcify at times around these very perceptions, and certainly to quickly do it. I've known, as you have, if you're older in this room, those of us who are older, and all of us that are adults, you've been exposed to a lot of people already in your life. You know somebody right now in your mind. You're sitting there and you're probably thinking, there's somebody you know. It could be man, it could be woman. And you just love going to that person because they have wisdom. They have discernment. And you just love to talk with them. And especially some of the older ones who have been around life. What's the old cliche? They've been around the block a few times. Tommy, you've been around every block in the world, haven't you? Jim Morgan's been around a lot of blocks. Some of our older members. I didn't say old, see? I said older. Some of you ladies. You've been around the block a few times. That's why Paul tells Titus there, the older women are to teach the younger women, because the older women have been around the block a few times. And they can teach you young women about a lot of things about life. And that's why the elders can teach the younger, because they've been around the block a few times. And they've learned that their perceptions, a lot of them have learned, that their perceptions has got them in trouble at times, too many times. My idea, my opinions. You know, I've spoken here recently again a lot about unity. Talked about unity. And we cannot find unity if we continue to divide and subdivide and argue about our own perceptions, ideals, opinions, what have you. And this is what's going on in the world around us right now so much of the time. Ken Keyes, I don't know who the man, I found this saying on the internet and I really loved it. Ken Keyes, K-E-Y-E-S, made the statement, "We see the world not as it is, but as we are." We see the world, no doubt, how we view it as individuals so much of the time. We see it through our eyes, through hearing the ears and what we hear. And it's amazing, and I know you will identify with this, how many times that we've been guilty of it ourselves. I've been guilty of it. You hear a part of a conversation and you make a hard judgment on what you thought you heard. Or you saw something and you made a quick judgment on what you thought you saw. I've been in that situation different times in my life where I might look across the room after service. I might be on this side of the room and two of you might be over on this side of the room. And two of you over here could be very animated right in each other's face. You could be really hands-up animated. I could form a quick perception. Do I need to go counsel that? Or we see that person in the congregation that we know that we're not on the best terms with, being honest about it, and they're talking to somebody across the room. And maybe the person begins to think they're talking about me. I mean, how many directions and how profound can we all take this? I mean, we can take it to that old show. Those of us older remember The Outer Limits. Remember that old TV show? Say, Judy, you don't remember that? The Outer Limits. You didn't get out much when you was younger, did you? The Outer Limits. We can take these things to the outer limits of our mind and our thinking. The proper power of perception will again enable us to be able to look at situations and make good judgments. Now we'll get to that here a little bit. I wrote in my notes as I put it together, the sermon outline, and this is the way I wanted to put it, to make it hopefully really drive the point home. How often, I wrote in my notes, do we bow down at the feet of our own ideals and opinions? How often we bow down to our own ideals and opinions, our own perspectives, my own perception, my truth is superior to your truth again. My approach, what I understand, is greater than the way you see it. I see it, and my way of seeing it is better than your way of seeing it. These are all within the realm of perception and perspectives. And they drive wedges between us. How often do we allow, again, our eyes and ears to deceive us? The man who was the trooper who was running beside the vehicle, the drunk who had too much vodka, if you had put a Bible, he'd have put his hand on and swore that that man was running 50 miles per hour until maybe he sobered up. How often, brethren, does perception with us become reality in all too many situations? I said to someone this week on the phone, yeah, I don't know who it was, it doesn't matter, you know, but whoever it was, and I made the comment, I said, it's time as never before for the church to wake up. It's time as never before for all of us to really get our eyes open to not only the things happening around us, to be watching, to be watchful. The Greek word for watch, when Christ says to watch, yes, Christ's talking about, yes, he's talking about even watching world events. That's all part of it. But the greatest implication from the Greek word watch that Christ uses is to put a watch over your very soul. It's to put a watch on your spiritual state. That is the whole profound essence when Christ says to watch, to put a watch on your own salvation. Paul again in Philippians 2:12, to work your salvation out with fear and trembling. Again, the definition of perception. And the proper perception is the ability to see and hear and become aware of something through the senses, but to judge correctly as much as possible. But I will get to it here very soon. But not to judge by our senses. To judge by another means. And again, it comes through and by what God is doing and giving all of us to judge by. We simply, again, get so many things wrong because we think, again, that what we saw or what we heard was accurate, true. You read something. How much of our perceptions anymore is coming from what we read? I mean, I've got a column, and I'll just tell you, I wrote it already. It will come out Tuesday night. And I'll give you the title. I've never done this. Culture and its Bully Puppets. That's the column that I will send out Tuesday night. I've already written it. Culture, council culture, and its bully puppets. You can read what I wrote. How much are we believing what we're reading? Are we properly sifting all the things that are being put out in all the venues of social media? Are we really properly sifting? Because if you're not sifting, there's all kinds of lies and distortions mixed in. Whoever I was talking to this week, and I say it that way because I talk a lot, don't I? And I talk to a lot of people and phone calls with a few of you and that type of thing. And I hope all of you know and understand the perfect mix for Satan to utilize is to put so much truth mixed in with lies and deceptions. He likes to mix enough truth in, and that's what gives it its deadly effect, is that he can put enough truth insertion and then dress the lies around it, and it makes it very hard for even God's people sometimes to properly judge and discern. This is off the internet. Those of you who have been to eye doctors, I won't try to say the medical word, I'd probably flunk the test. You go to the eye doctor. Raise your hand. Have you had a depth perception test taken? Well, Rhonda has some depth perception. Let me read what I copied from the internet. This was from Kirsten Boyd. Depth perception is the ability to see things in three dimensions, including length, width, and depth, and to judge how far away an object is. For accurate depth perception, you generally need to have binocular two-eyed vision and a process called convergence. Our two eyes see an object from slightly different angles, and our brain compares and processes the two sets of information to form a single image. When both eyes see clearly and the brain processes a single image effectively, it is called stereopsis, if I said it right. People who rely on vision primarily in one eye is called monocular vision. They may struggle with depth perception. However, it says some people who have had good vision in one eye for a long period of time may find they have acceptable depth perception. And this is because their brain has adjusted in various ways to make up for the limited visual input from one eye. Of course, some spiritual connections begin to go through my mind as I read that. Do we go through life with both eyes open? Are we able to see and process, you might say, with the old cliche, both eyes open? Do we? And speaking spiritually, are we viewing things most of all from God's perspective? It always comes back to that. I have been really kind of hitting that aspect for a while now, by design and purpose, that most of all, we have to come to know the mind of God. This is exactly what conversion ultimately is about. We have to come not only to know what the Scriptures say, but to judge and discern and understand how God thinks. The more we come to understand from the study of His Word, Him speaking to us, the more we begin to understand His mind and that of Jesus Christ, the more we think like them. I don't want to misquote it. It wasn't in my notes, but I want to flip to it. It came to mind. I think I can do it real fast. I didn't want to. Philippians 2, I thought it was. Philippians 2, 5. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ. See, that's what our conversion process is about. Our mind being so tuned in, our spirit, the spirit in man, and the Spirit of God joined with that, and bringing us into greater awareness of not only how they think, but what they think. You know, I said in that kind of a short impromptu message earlier that if Jesus Christ walked among us right now, what would He say? Now, each one of you would have a perception. And a lot of your perceptions might very well line up pretty close together on, if He walked among us, what might He say to us? What might He say to us about our faith, maybe most of us? No, let me rewind the tape. Our love for each other. Because love is the greatest gift of all. And that's the gift that we ask more for than anything, is our love to them. And then to turn around and love each other. But faith, as I said the last time here, faith is right there so tied in to the love of God. But no doubt, the times we're in, I feel sure Christ would address the essence of faith. Especially at the time we're in right now. One of you said to me before services, made to come in again. You know, we know the Scripture. Will I find faith when I come? Reckon who He had most in mind when He said that. He knows the world is not His yet. He's talking about the church. Will I find faith when I come? I want to introduce now a great partner to perception. And if you want to have very good, sound perceptions, then you need this ally, this certain essence to be partnered, linked right in, hand in glove with perception. And that is the Word discernment. Discernment. I said in Birmingham last week, I mentioned there that, and I would say the same here, I'm sure I said it in Fulton too, we need to put every one of us on our prayer list, your personal prayer list. Each one of us in this room needs to include it, if probably daily, as a part of your prayer. God grant me the discernment in the times we live in. Grant me the spirit of discernment, because the spirit of discernment is needed now as never before. Because the word discernment and the definition is very simple but profound. The ability to judge well. To judge well. To have exercised great judgment in all matters. And all matters. All of you in this room interact with each other. Not on the Sabbath. Many of you during the week, you Facebook, you Twitter, text, whatever. Your relationship goes on, many of you during the week, back and forth. And so you chat and talk about this or you talk about that. And you probably talk about things happening out here in the world. You're talking about all. And by the way, if you've not nothing to talk about right now, then you must be sitting under a stone somewhere. I think, by the way, what I'm thinking about, I think a lot of God's people now, as never before, is becoming more, I'll use that word, therapeutic, is becoming more and more therapeutic for God's people to share and support one another, because even we know in the end we win. We know in the end we win. We know in the end we win in that sense that we, in the end, if we stay true to God and Jesus Christ till our death, we will inherit eternity with them. We know that. We know we win. We get the prize in the end. It's just what's going to happen between now and the end. And that's what concerns us. And what are we going to have to go through? I sent the prayer request yesterday. I think it was yesterday. I sent so many, as you know, if you're looking at your emails. And the pain came back in the woman's back. And before I sent it to you, and I'm reading it, and I knew exactly what I'm going to read. The pain, she had pain in her back real quick. It was the cancer had come back. I sent the email yesterday or the day before. And, Mary, I don't think you'll mind me impersonating you. And Mary calls me up. Week and a half ago now, something like that. Got this pain in my right side. Let's go around to my back. I sent the emails out. I know y'all, a lot of you have called her and everything else. And I told her this a while ago. I said, I don't think I told you at the first phone call, but I thought, that sounds like gallbladder. Which turns out to be, the sludge. We'll call it the sludge in your bile duct and all. And she's doing a lot better right now. We're glad to hear that. But at that point, though, we don't know exactly. So my perception was, sounded like a gallbladder problem. Well, it turned out to me my perception was right. But with anything, it's guesswork until we come to that point of discovery of whether it's an illusion or reality. That night in the dark, I didn't know until I got right up to it that it was a little red wagon standing on its rear end. An inanimate object. That threw a scare into me, because I didn't know what it was. But I decided I wasn't going to run. Discerning, the gift of discernment, and such a valuable gift from God, and the ability to look, foresight, superior sight, to have that gift, to be able to look at things and have a good discernment, and to judge things more properly. And that's where the church today, we, all of us, each one of us, all of us together, we must continue to become better judges, because we're going to judge. We're going to be Christ's judges in the world tomorrow. We're going to be judges and teachers and kings and priests. And this is going to go into the great white throne judgment when the billions and billions will come up. Because the first fruits walk through the door, they are Christ's administrators for eternity. The first fruits, the firstborn, will be the administrators for eternity under Christ. Not just during the millennium. I'm very happy when Dan Preston, who will be coordinating Panama City for the first time, and what a time to coordinate the feast for the first time. A number of weeks ago, the speaking assignments were being put together and put out for Panama City. And at first, I thought, well, where am I? Because I always, where in the feast will I speak? Well, I'm actually this year, if planning, I'll be on Family Day. I get to speak on Family Day. And I'm loving that assignment now more and more. Because look what's happening to the families of society in the world. So I get to talk about family on Family Day. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm already putting it together, thinking about it, a lot of things. Because the nuclear family is not only under attack, it is by evil designs that the nuclear family, evil is wanting to destroy the nuclear family. It's satanic, is what it is. My eyes see what I hope your eyes do as well, that there are evil foes of darkness working behind the veil of darkness, Satan and his again, that are outright, by design, seeking to destroy this nation. And they are very much seeking to destroy the church. They know, though. They know they will not destroy the church. The Bible is clear. They cannot destroy the church, but they can destroy a physical nation. It's called Jacob's trouble. Matthew 16, the church. The gates of hell cannot prevail against the church. Perception, discernment, such valuable gifts. Now you're thinking, is he ever going to go to Scripture? Go to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3. Give you a moment to get there. Proverbs 3, we'll begin in verse 1. Solomon speaking here, speaking no doubt to his children, his son. When I read the words of Solomon, the greater reflection of Solomon's writings in Proverbs are ultimately our Heavenly Father talking to us, His children. This is ultimately what is in view when Solomon writes, is the ultimate teaching lesson that our Heavenly Father is teaching us, we are His children, imparting His wisdom, His understanding to us. Verse 1, my son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. For length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And verse 4, and so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. Verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Not part, but all your heart. And there is where it goes wrong, though. And lean not on your own understanding. This is where it goes wrong. This is where it goes off the rails. This is where we go down different paths. It's when we start leaning to our own beliefs, our own opinions, weighing heavily in on what we think is right. Proverbs 14:12, trying to do that from memory, the way that seems right to a man, the ways are of his death. You know, I can't do that without checking myself out. Here I've been talking about fact checking. Proverbs 14:12. Yeah. There's a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. We see this. Don't do this. Don't do this at home. But here I stand. If I lean to the right and I keep leaning too far, or I lean too far to the left, keep leaning, what am I going to do? I'm going to fall. Lean not to your own understanding, because every time we lean too heavily to our own thoughts and thinking, perspectives, opinions, beliefs, we fall down. Every time we try to do it our way, we make the biggest mistakes. Verse 6. In part of your ways. Did you catch that? In all of your ways, acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. Verse 7. Do not be wise in your own eyes. When I read that, don't be so opinionated. Have you ever, it's cliche, sure you have. I started to say, have you ever been around a very opinionated person? Yeah, you have, and I have too. Maybe sometimes we're guilty ourselves of being too opinionated. You know probably someone right now, you ask them something, they got an opinion about everything. And their perceptions are always superior. Verse 8. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase, so that your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. You could go back. You can jot down Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. Proverbs chapter 1, 1 through 7. Proverbs chapter 2, verses 1 through 15. Those are very good. I had them in my notes, but for the sake of time, I won't go there. Very good words on wisdom and understanding, God's wisdom, His understanding. I had thoughts this morning. I got up and was thinking about some things, as I know you do too, and we're thinking creatures. And I was thinking about that even though all the things we see going around us, the riots, the COVID, all the bad things, all the things that our minds are trying to process, and they really are. Oh, how I miss some of those golden years of the 80s or 70s when it seemed things kind of slowed down in those two decades. Those of us who were around in the 70s and 80s, things seemed so much slower then, so less complicated. We thought things were complicated then. We just didn't know, did we? Life is so hard anymore. Becoming harder, it's becoming more complicated, more difficult. And I thought this morning, and yet, as a pastor, as a minister of Christ, I must continue to most of all process the spiritual. I must come before you and teach of the spiritual things. It's not going to do me any good to come in here and try to talk for 2 hours on politics, although I well understand what's going on, because I've studied politics all my life. I think I understand greatly how human nature works. But the most important thing is I point you to God and Jesus Christ. And I point you to them using their words and teaching you to become much more personally acquainted with them. To become so much more intimate with them. And it will pay the greatest dividends as times get worse. As times continue to get worse. Discernment. Perception. Such great gifts to have that type of discernment. You can jot it down. 1 Chronicles chapter 12 verse 32. 1 Chronicles chapter 12 verse 32. Just a brief reference. David was numbering his divisions, preparing his army. Looking at the manpower there in verse 32, and you have this passing reference to when they get to the sons of Issachar. Just this passing reference. But it says there in verse 32, of the children of Issachar who had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. The sons of Issachar who had that greater discernment, greater understanding of the times of what to do. I ask the question again, who on this earth, most of all, should be not only having the greatest discernment to know what's going to happen or that we need to do than the church of God? And if we don't have it, we should be asking for it. Something popped into my head. Carl McNair was my pastor for 7 years. in my teenage years growing up. Carl McNair's pastorate there in Memphis and Tupelo, back in that day and time, Memphis and Tupelo were a circuit back in the 60s. And how well I remember, we had the 20th anniversary in 1981, we had the 20th anniversary of the Memphis Church. And I well remember Carl McNair in that powerful sermon looked out at us and he said, he didn't just say it. Few of you in this room didn't, few of you knew Carl McNair, probably. He thundered it out. He thundered it out in 1981 at the 20th anniversary of the Memphis Church. He said, if you don't have a fire under you for God, then light one. He shook the room with that thunderous voice he had. If you don't have a fire for God, passion, zeal, then you light it. It really hit my consciousness. Never forgotten it because he was my pastor for 7 years in my teenage years. We are living, brethren, in such challenging times with so much deception, so many lies, so many distortions, fake news, you name it. And I will send a column out Tuesday night. I've already written it, like I said. I've already titled it, Culture and Its Bully Pulpits. You just have to read it and see where I'm going with that. We've got new types of bullies on the block anymore. Obtaining proper depth perception. Go to Paul's words in Ephesians. As you're turning to Ephesians, chapter 1. Ephesians chapter 1. As you're turning there, I want to give a historical perspective. I want to just be very forthright about it, state it boldly, but as I see it, perception-wise. My perception, I put out. I was on the phone with one of you this past week and had a long conversation with one of you in this room this past week, and we were talking. And I said to you, the one in the room, I said, I go back to the 60s. My first feast in 61 in Big Sandy. First church service, Memphis again in 61. 8-year-old boy. And I saw something in the church of the 60s I don't see that much of anymore. I see something that I don't see near as much anymore. The church of the 60s, I saw it. It wasn't just my perception. It was reality. The church was a sacrificing church in the 60s. I saw people. They were there on the Sabbath. They were there at the Feast of Tabernacles. And nothing stopped them. I saw those vehicles come from New York State and from Washington State belching black smoke. I don't know how some of them got there. Down to Big Sandy. But they were there. We've just opened to the letter that Paul wrote to Ephesus. Ephesus, that first church that Christ addresses in Revelation. They lost their first love. I've seen it. I'll be honest, I see it. I've seen too many lose that first love. I've seen lack of zeal, passion, and I see far too much of it. Paul wrote here to the Ephesians at Ephesus, verse 15. Therefore, I also, after I heard of your faith in the Lord Jesus and your love for all the saints, do not cease to give thanks for you, making mention of you in my prayers, that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory, may give to you the spirit of wisdom and revelation and the knowledge of Him, and the eyes of your understanding being enlightened, that you may know what is the hope of His calling, what are the riches of the glory of His inheritance in the saints. What powerful words that Paul wrote. That you may have the spirit of wisdom and revelation through the knowledge, and that our eyes may see through His understanding. I go back to what Ken Martin said again to me in a personal conversation quite a while back now. Ken Martin and I were talking. He is our regional pastor. You go online and you listen to messages. I encourage you to sometimes maybe go listen to some of the messages of your regional pastor even more sometime. But Ken looked at me and he said, you know, Gary, people will come to us again and say, well, what do you think about this or that or that? And he said, what does God say? My father-in-law, Sidney Smith, his memory lives on in my mind powerfully. My mentor, who taught me so much. And that's the way he operated. He would take his Bible, if you were in Sidney's presence, and he would take his Bible and you had a question for him, he'd open that book, would he not, my dear wife? Open chapter verse. Read that. You read it. What does that say to you? What does it say to you? What does God say to you? You're going to hear me. If you come to me and you want to talk about some of these things, as much as I'm capable with his mind and spirit, hopefully, I'm going to try to point you, what does he say? Ken Martin brings out in that sermon, the generation that forgot God. He goes to Exodus and don't follow a mob to riot. Go back, listen to the sermon, the generation that forgot God, by Ken Martin, June 6th. Very good. We, as human beings, are so prone to operating by human senses. And when God calls us and he brings us up from a watery grave, and we have hopefully in those vows to God in Christ given our life into their hands, you come from that watery grave, you stand there, and the minister or two lays hands and asks God for the Holy Spirit to come dwell. From that point on, you no longer belong to yourself. You no longer are your own. You are the property of Jesus Christ and the Father. You are the bride being prepared. You are the one that Christ mostly is coming for. Christ is coming for his bride. Can you imagine the anticipation going on in Christ's mind now to claim his bride? The first thing on Christ's mind is not, I'm going to punish all them bad people. I can't wait to punish all those bad evildoers. What's most on Christ's mind is you and I. And he's coming. And he's coming, might be sooner than most think. And he's coming to claim and lay claim to his most precious possession in the universe. You and I, the bride. And that will be for eternity. I've learned as I've grown older, hopefully, I hope you all are as well and will continue to, that we don't overly judge by the perceptions of our own human minds. That we don't, by the human eye, the ears, the hearing, the sight, that we don't reach conclusive and make conclusive decisions too much of the time without proper sifting and looking at things as much as possible. Everything that we put on the table, every topic that you put on the table, there's somewhere in this book, the Bible, that you're going to find God's mind on the matter. It'd be hard for any issue, if you know the mind of God, it'd be hard for any issue that comes up to say, okay, like my father-in-law, you say, let's open this up, let's see what God says about it. God weighs in on far more than most humans even realize. That's the problem. Most humans, and too many in the church at times, don't know what he says. It's called deep exploring. Turn to Isaiah. I'm going to finish here in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah, chapter 11. A prophecy, a promise. Isaiah, chapter 11, verse 1. I love these verses. This picture painted so vividly. I love the words, the way it's put. A prophecy, a promise. Chapter 11, Isaiah, verse 1. There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, the household there of Jesse through David, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, and the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. And his delight, verse 3, is in the fear of the Lord, and that is honor, respect. And he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. Jesus Christ came, was God in the flesh, and Christ did not use human reasoning. Christ did not judge by human sight, by the hearing of the ears alone. He judged all things by the righteousness of his Father in heaven. He judged all things through the prism and the spiritual vision. I have long had this kind of a little personal saying. I think every one of you in the room, you have a pet saying or two. I've had this little pet saying that we're to get up every morning. A lot of you, I look around, some of you wear glasses most of the time. But even those of you who wear glasses, you probably get up first thing in the morning, wash your face first, right? Right, Glenn, wash your face. Faye says, wash your face, Glenn, and I'll serve you some coffee. You put those glasses on. And I realize some of us, our eyesight's not that good, and you have to wear the glasses, and you see much better when you put those glasses on. I use the same analogy. We must get up every day, and we must put on the spiritual glasses. We must put on the spiritual lens, and we must wear those all during the day. We must see all things through the mind of God, and we must learn to perceive and discern all things as Jesus Christ and the Father are teaching us how to discern and perceive. Because the deceptions and the lies now are so great all around us. The deceptions, the lies will not decrease. They will increase. It's getting harder and harder to look at almost any topic that you want to think about and find the truth. I had the member a number of weeks ago, not in this congregation, a member in one of the other congregations, was on the phone with that person for a long time talking, and the person been in the church a long time, and the person said, I just don't know what to believe anymore. People are getting weary, they're getting worn out, they don't know what to believe anymore, but we can't toss the towel in. We must be the ultimate discerners of truth. We must, above all peoples, be sifting all things and always sifting through the lens and the view and the perception of God and Jesus Christ. Because even Jesus Christ did not operate by his human reasoning or human senses. What did he say? I came to do the will of my Father. And that's what we're doing. That's what we're supposed to be doing, to do the will of the Father. I wanted to speak about the subject today because I do realize that every one of us is going to increase to the point to where it's going to become more and more difficult because to know what's right and wrong sometimes. This thing is headed. This thing is headed ultimately to, again, a power that is going to show up on the earth as we've known for decades. The Bible, like a little something, the Bible tells me so, called the beast power. Steve Myers, by the way, I haven't got to hear the sermon yet. Steve Myers, some of you may have heard it. Steve Myers gave a sermon last Sabbath in Cincinnati. I think it's the Mark and the Beast, Natalie, the Mark and the Beast. I want to listen. I haven't heard it yet, but I want to listen to it, try to this week. And I think a lot of us are starting to think, you know, with the vaccine that they're trying to get, you know, out there for the COVID and all, and we're thinking, this this situation, that's it. Could that be the mark? Now, I haven't listened to the sermon yet, so I'm going to have to not say much and I'll listen to Steve's sermon. But we all have in view from the prophecies that there's coming a time when the greatest delusion that has ever happened will happen to the world. A delusion, a great delusion, which in essence will be an illusion. The eyes and the ears of human reasoning will deceive the masses. And when that time comes, the only ones that won't be deceived, as the Bible tells us, are those who belong to God. And Jesus Christ said, even the very elect could almost be deceived. Perception. Is it always reality? You answer the question.